Deplorable Nation, a podcast where your voices can be heard, where things that affect you and your family are important, because it's important to all of us. Every one of us matters and everybody has a voice. We're going to be bringing you news, current events, and throw in a lot of humor. And then you decide for yourself. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Deplorable Nation. This one is episode 32, called The Real Frontline, and I'm your host, Deplorable Janet. Today, I have one of my favorite people back with me again, and I'm so excited, Mr. Matt, Kung Fu Medic, a.k.a. Brilliant Genius of the Universe. Thank you for coming back with me today.
It's my pleasure, Janet. Thanks for having me again. That's a good introduction as well. You'll make my head big. My real head.
Oh, yeah, the real head, not the little head.
Ah, that's the one, yeah. We managed like 6 seconds before we got a dick joke in.
I know. We're on that's a roll it. Today, I'm that's telling it. You what.
100%.
So today is going to be a special treat, and some people, this may be a little over your head, but we're going to try to make it so that you can understand. We're going to be talking about the pandemic and the quacky vaccines and all the lovely things that have been going on. So that's why I wanted to have you today, because you are such a brilliant individual and you actually are on the front line and you treat these people and their homes. So
yes, in one way, shape or form or the other. Yeah. So I can't remember the last time we spoke, I was doing what I'm doing, but I'm still doing that. So I still carry out home visits on behalf of doctors. So it's been, so I just want to, hey everybody, by the way, just hey, thanks for joining us. Thanks for being back. but I've been pestering Janet to get something out there to the people because I'm seeing different people every single day, family members and patients. I'm getting hit with the same sort of questions all the time. So I thought it would be good for us to try and put some stuff down, or at least out there, that's I don't want to say dumbed down, because I don't like to say that, because I'm not insinuating that everyone can't work it out, but it's been filtered by people and myself, so hopefully we can all understand it a little bit easier.
Right.
And then if you've got a bit more of a basic understanding on how things work, then knowledge is power, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Oh, 100%.
So
it's like a superpower.
Do you know what? I never really thought it was. And everybody, especially when you work in medicine, everyone's like, oh, you're so great. And they put you on this pedestal sometimes, and I don't like it. And I just kind of think, well, a mechanic is brilliant, because all he's just remembering stuff just like we do. It's just what you can retain. But then I keep getting told I'm really modest and I should stop doing that. But I don't like to be put on a pedestal, because I'm just like everybody else. I just know how to sort of stop people from dying.
So you don't like me telling you that you're brilliant then?
No, I hate it. It makes me blush. It generally makes me blush. And I don't know why. I really struggle with it. And you'd think someone like me that's doesn't stop talking, and I'm quite confident in myself, I'm really bad at taking compliments. I like them. I'm like, oh, shucks. But then I'm a bit, I just can't, I'm like, okay, that's enough now. That's enough now. So I think perhaps maybe that's why I'm a bit more on the level with the people that I'm dealing with most of the time.
Amen to that.
Exactly. And I really didn't appreciate that at the start of my journey in medicine, until probably the last few years, where people are generally appreciating someone just normal, speaking to them and just being honest, because there's been some tough decisions to make for everybody with regards to you know, what's been going on with COVID and all that kind of stuff. But I spoke to one of my friends. He's a very close friend of mine, my source. Yeah, can't divulge my source here. but I pinned him down yesterday and asked him some questions because I just said, look, you know, if you've got anything you'd like to get out to the masses, what would you say? So we've had a chat and I've thrown in some bits as well. So, and that's basically why I wanted to come on today and try and just smash some stuff out with people so that when people say stuff, they can go, well, actually, it's not really this, so it's this. And then we're like, yeah, choke slam, peace. Mic drop and then walk off. So, because I just feel that's how it is, you know, sometimes, because there's some, there's stuff that other people know about everything else that I'm like, how do you know that? So it is about trying to just surround yourself with people that know everything, isn't it?
It is. And shut it's it important. Off. So let's start with the proper diagnosing of COVID, because you can't rely on the CDC and the WHO numbers and stuff like that, because they have a lot of assumptive diagnostic, well, not even diagnostic, but assumptive diagnoses, basically, of patients who they assume have COVID, even if they've never tested them. And I would be one of the patients, if they saw me, they would immediately tell me that I had COVID because I have a stuffy nose and I cough and, you know, whatever. That's my sinuses. But so how do you go about properly diagnosing COVID?
So a good point, because at the minute you would think it's just a positive PCR test.
Right.
And that's it. And that's it, which has been a bane of contention of mine from the beginning, and loads of other people that
me
work
too. Yeah.
In the front line.
Me
yeah. Not only because obviously the foundations of what the initial test was for, everybody knows that now, for enhancing DNA. So you could, like, you know, read it better under magnification was initially what the PCR test was for, polychain myelase, something reaction, I think it is right. what it means. So it was originally designed so he could take smaller parts of DNA and copy it and put it on top of each other to magnify it, to study it, to make it easier. But that's all out there on the internet. The guy that did it obviously mysteriously died after he came out and started saying that they weren't really using his test appropriately. So anyway, exactly. we all knew that at the start. So great start straight out of the bat.
Definitely.
Exactly. So it was always a bit of a we were never sure of false positives. And I know, I think we touched on it real briefly last time as well, but the false positive still hasn't been a number that's been pinned down and still doesn't seem to be featured or considered in anything that they're working out at the minute. And they're still saying it's anywhere between sort of 30 to 50% seems to be the general consensus, but some papers are saying up to sort of 60-70% false positives.
Exactly.
So even if you were just generous and went, okay, we'll go 30%, that's still a third of all the positives that are coming out are still potentially false positives. So if you just went off the PCR tests on its own, everybody potentially could be having it regardless.
Which is really interesting, because wasn't it the World Health Organization that just recently came out and said, oh, geez, our bad. The amplification cycles on this to get tests to, quote, work in the first place. Yeah, we've discovered that we have a lot of false positives. But we can't give you specifics on what the false positive rate is, but we know there's a lot because the amplification was too high.
Exactly. And I read somewhere else as well that the first diagnosis of COVID in the States, I think, I can't remember where it was diagnosed using a PCR test.
Right.
So it wasn't actually, we could argue that it wasn't actually even really here at the time.
Exactly.
When they said it was, I'm not saying it doesn't exist. It did come in, but, you know, we don't actually know whether the strain or the person that tested positive, whether it was a false positive or not, that started the whole thing. So going back to the false positive, the PCR test. So yeah, so a lot of people have been coming into hospital with PCR positive tests. or wanting to be tested or thinking that they've got symptoms and they haven't because they've got a positive PCR test. So it does all sorts of stuff psychologically to people as well, which doesn't help. Right. So we go on clinical presentation as well as a positive PCR. So you'd go off by whether a person is presenting with COVID symptoms. So if you've got a patient who's normally fit and well, and then all of a sudden he's having really bad shortness of breath and he can't seem to get his breathing right and he's feeling breathless all the time, has a fever, has a cough, he's probably got COVID potentially. But if we weren't in today's environment, you wouldn't do nothing about it and you'd probably just ride it out until you started to get better or you needed hospital admission. But then you throw in a PCR test that's positive and then you start instilling panic into everybody. And then, you know, we're still not sure whether the PCR test does actually isolate the COVID strain either, or whether it's just doing influenza A and influenza B. So segue, sorry, real quick. There's a Irish doctor. I think she's part of this Great World GP Alliance people. I can't remember their names. Sorry. But she's done a small test already where she tested 1,500 positive PCR tests in a lab. I think she got her team to do it. And they only found influenza A and influenza B on these swabs. They didn't find any SARS-CoV-2 at all.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So she started off a wider study, which they're still concluding at the moment, which obviously if that's come turns out to be true, then obviously we've all been lied to. But that's a whole nother level of stuff that I can't really prove or I've got nothing to go, you know,
but let me ask you this though, because I, you know, with the flu numbers flatlining this year and there is no flu. however, it's weird because they're still like really pushing the flu shot. But to me, as a critical thinking medical professional, it would make complete and utter sense to me that what they're finding on these swabs are actually flu amplification particles, because the PCR testing, the nasal swabs are the exact same testing that they do for the flu.
Yeah.
So it would make sense that this is actually a flu.
Which is what we've always said, isn't it? All along.
Exactly. Exactly. 100%.
So it's, and this is where it's been difficult because, you know, we've not said from the beginning that there's nothing happening and it's not here. But whenever there's a new virus or anything that gets introduced into a population, it is going to spread because no one has immunity to it. You have lucky people that have natural immunity to stuff, but they're the ones that, you know, spread the antibodies and everything as well. But sometimes we don't. So you're always going to have casualties in this kind of scenario. That's why it's called a pandemic. How many, obviously, it's difficult to say. And obviously with the massaging of numbers and all this kind of stuff, it's been a headache. But my colleagues are basically, they're aware of that, what's going on, but they're still at the front line trying to sort out what's coming through the door, because that stuff is still coming through the door, regardless of whether it's a positive COVID test or whether it's just, you know, heart failure, because obviously heart failure and COVID get misdiagnosed quite frequently as well.
100%.
So it's difficult. Sorry. So you've got to keep all these things, bear these things in mind. But from the general from a normal person's perspective, if you're normally fit and well and you feel unwell, depending how unwell you feel, you know, depends on what you do about it. You know, the way they're managing it at the moment is if people are having positive PCR tests and symptoms, they're sending them home and they're giving them a pulse oximeter to stick on their finger.
Right.
And they're ringing them three times a day and getting their oxygen saturation levels and basically telling them if they fall below, I think it's 88%, then they need to phone an ambulance and then come in and then potentially be given oxygen. So there's a lot of stuff being managed in the community now, which is good.
But can I just interject something in there? Okay, so for your oxygen level to drop, I want people to think about all of the people who are wearing masks all the time. Some people are so scared from the the fear porn that they even wear masks inside their house. When you wear a mask for a long period of time, your oxygen level is normally going to drop. And so that's also something that's very concerning to me being a nurse, is that, so now you're telling people that they're going to need like a ventilator, or they have to go in the hospital because their oxygen level dropped below it, what they think it needs to be. However, you're also wearing a mask for some people, like literally almost 24 hours a day. You know, there's people that are sleeping in it. You just know there are.
Yeah, on their own, sleeping, hugging themselves. No, I shouldn't say that, Mickey. No, well, you're right. And one of my colleagues was saying to me, he used to suffer from tonsil stones, and he hasn't had them for ages. But then, obviously, since he's been wearing a mask, he's been having it pretty much every other week.
Right.
So I know a little while ago there were some reports coming out of there being some more presentations of gingivitis and other kind of oral issues. But,
right,
you know, my wife has even been complaining, saying she's had dry skin around her face, and loads of people are saying it's nasty having that thing all day. I constantly think my breath smells when I've got it on.
I was just going to say that because, like, when I went on my trip and had to wear a mask in the airport and all that stuff all the time, and literally like all day long, because you can't take a straight flight anywhere anymore. Mm. And it's like my husband, he actually warned me ahead of time. He's like, you are completely going to have mask breath. I strongly suggest either you carry a thing, a mouthwash in your purse or some really good gum or something. He's like, because it's going to be bad. And I'm like, oh man.
Yeah. I need to go.
I know, it's like the nastiest thing. It's because it breaks down the bacteria, the normal bacterial flora in your mouth. It breaks that down. So you're going to get, you know, more gum disease, more infections, things like that, and a buildup of bad bacteria because you don't have that normal oxygenation to keep yourself in balance.
No,
I don't know. Exactly. It's crazy.
Well, there's a video I wanted to share with everybody at some point. I've got the links that I can fire away. It's this gentleman who's vaping through different masks.
Mm-hmm.
And it just sums it all up because, you know, when you're talking about, when anybody talks about anything airborne, that includes smoke, vapor, you know, all that kind of stuff. So if you can smell it, it's an airborne particle. That's it. That's how it works. Some airborne particles are larger than others, but if you can generally smell it, then you know there's something airborne in the air. Viruses obviously don't have a smell, but you know that's what the kind of particles we're talking about. So a small cloth mask, if you could, I think there was two videos I saw. One of a bloke, a doctor vaping, and another one of a gentleman. I think he was in Canada, outside in the freezing cold, so you could see his warm breath coming out of the mask. And he first started with one surgical mask, then he started with two, then a cloth one, and then he had about three on at once, and you could still see his now I know obviously you can see it's because you've got hot air meeting cold air, so you can see it, but it's more to show you how the direction of how the air particles will still spread. They'll travel the path of least resistance, because if you've got such a good seal around your mouth for your mask, you won't be able to blow out properly, because your masks ain't designed for you to breathe like that through them. They're not a respirator. So the air is always going to come out either way, in either side. So you're in theory, you're not really protecting yourself, other people from yourself, because that's obviously what the slogan they were using, where they protect others, wear your mask. And it's like, that's great, but it's not coming out forwards, but it's coming out left and right, wherever there's gaps in the mask.
I was just going to say, there's so many people that I've seen like that, where when they put a mask on, they have these big gaping areas on the sides. And I'm like, okay, like even healthcare workers and stuff. And it cracks me up because I'm like, what part of that exactly is protective of anything? It's not.
No, nothing at all. And it's really difficult because I have to wear a mask for when I do my job. A lot of it's just to keep everybody happy, essentially. But, you know, there are some people that are wearing masks and some people that are not, and things. But there's been so much evidence prior to this that's talked about the use of masks in you know, hospital settings, primary care and everything else. When they had bird flu the first time, they did loads of studies back then, and they proved that there wasn't much of a difference that warranted, I think it was 2% difference, I think, off the top of my head. That's not enough to warrant making masks mandatory. So they didn't.
No.
And that's why they never have. And that's why whenever I worked in medicine, you know, we don't wear masks. Generally, surgeons do it. Or if there's an outbreak of DNV, neurovirus, or gastroenteritis, depending on what people know as neurovirus, diarrhea and vomiting, essentially, then or MRSA, but then that was usually in the hospital. But then even then, they were wearing the massive biohazard suits because they know MRSA is airborne. So, and that was what one of my colleagues was saying. He said they've been having rubbish PPE. Essentially, you should have a fit tested mask, yeah, by whoever your health and safety person is, to stop airborne particles going in there.
If you're a healthcare worker.
Yeah.
Yes.
Essentially, yeah, you should. That's why surgical masks are never supposed to be worn for long periods of time, because they don't create.
And you know, here's talking about surgical mask. Here's the funny thing. There are certain employers, certain hospitals, etc., that tell their employees, here's your mask. You have to wear the mask that we give you. And it's not, mind you, anything other than a surgical mask that now you can buy literally at Walgreens or anywhere, Walmart, etc. Okay. And so they give you this mask and tell you, wear this, and unless, you know, like if a loop breaks on it or something, you can come back and get a new mask. They want you to re-wear or to continue wearing the same mask every day of the week until an ear loop breaks. Now, I'm going to tell you, those are one and done. Those are not ever supposed to be multiple use. And so these are healthcare agencies that are pushing this to their employees. You should know better, and you should be ashamed of yourselves, and you should be shut down, because you obviously completely missed safety protocols and safety training and basic science. That's a no-no.
And this is the thing, that they have them there, but I think people just tend to use the same one until it breaks or whatever, which, again, completely defeats the purpose of it. But
it does.
It just seems to be everyone's complying, aren't they, whether it works or not, instead of sort of saying, look, it's difficult for people. I get this, because if you don't want to wear a mask, you're constantly going to get in a fight all the time. You know, you're going to have people looking at you, people staring at you. People tutting and you know, getting, well, in England we are at the minute anyway, you know, because it's pretty much we have to wear them everywhere. Some people know the rules with not asking us for it to prove our exemptions, but other people don't. And some people just haven't got the mental strength to be dealing with that on a daily basis. So there are people wearing the lanyards that says they've got exemptions and essentially singling themselves out unintentionally. But, you know, so that stuff is already happening. So it's difficult to just say no, because you're such a minority of you. I mean, I generally don't it's not that I don't mind. I understand why people are wearing the masks. I think there's a bigger issue here at the minute, but we're never going to be able to stop people wearing masks until we convince people that, you know, the virus is either not as bad as it was or it's disappeared. But that's not happening anytime soon.
Right. So
I do feel sorry for people in this situation, because most people in the world are just nice people and they're just trying to do the best that they can without upsetting anybody or putting anyone at risk. So they really are starting to play on people's emotions even more so now. I mean, we're coming up to a year now we are in England, mid-March, I think it was. So we've had pretty much intermittent lockdowns for nearly 12 months.
And it's funny because what you said is absolutely right. There's a lot of people that will comply because they don't want anybody to say anything to them. I don't comply, and I have not had one person, except for once, that's ever said anything, and that's when I went to the grocery store, and they told me I couldn't shop there without one. And I was like, really? Because that's a complete and total violation of my civil rights, because I have an exemption, and I'm sorry that that hurts your feelings, but your feelings don't trump the law. And so, like, that's the only time anyone has ever said anything to me. And I said something right back, and then they're like, oh, okay, well, then you can come in. I'm like, yeah, of course I can come in, because you can't tell me I can't.
And that's exactly right. Yeah. And I think because you know your rights.
Exactly.
Within reason, obviously. I know that. And that's because you can still be polite and know your rights. And I think there's a difference at the minute that the people are just, anyone who's approaching them, asking them about a mask, they're getting quite aggressive towards the people asking. Right. Instead of just saying, I've got an exemption or whatever. And then, you know, that's it done. But I don't know. You can't control everybody in that regard. Everybody's different in the way that they think. And some people just take the information they read literally everywhere.
So can I ask you, or not ask you, because I already know the answer to this, but I'm just going to throw this out there. Do you think there is, this is going to be a science question. do antibiotics treat viruses?
No.
Exactly.
No.
And so think of this. Think about, like, especially over here. Anytime somebody, like, comes in with the sniffles or something, this is, like, all the way back in the past. They're so quick to put people on antibiotics, even before doing any lab work or anything like that. You must have an infection. Here's an antibiotic. Which long-term antibiotic use obviously breaks down your immunity and also makes you very, like, to get to the point where antibiotics won't do you any good in the future. It damages your body. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so the thing that gets me is a lot of healthcare facilities are putting people on antibiotics for this. You cannot treat a virus with an antibiotic. You just can't.
100%. And this is the thing that's been, because the presentation of COVID, going back to what we said before, the presentation of COVID, the clinical presentation of COVID is so similar to lots of things, chest infections and other bits and pieces.
Right.
If COVID wasn't about, then people would be treating it. If you're generally coughing up a funny coloured mucus, then you could argue that you've got a chest infection, whether it's bacterial or viral, you don't generally know. But that's why you don't usually treat with antibiotics straight off the bat, because 90% of the time you can get over it. Yeah, you might feel a bit rough, but your body will get over it. But that's the concern with, this is why with, so going back to the beginning with diagnosing COVID just from a PCR test, that's what you're going to be left with. You could have other things, exacerbations of asthma, COPD, heart failure, and obviously bacterial chest infections. And you've got bacterial and viral pneumonia as well, which are linked to COVID. So you would need to do proper investigations such as chest x-rays, but then chest x-rays on their own are only sort of 89% effective for diagnosing COVID pneumonia, which is a new study has come out. So you would do that in conjunction with some bloods, you know, blood work and things as well.
Definitely. Yeah.
Because there's been reports that some younger people have been having sort of strokes and because the COVID is messing with people's platelets, which is the clotting factors of your blood, and it's throwing off microthrombi, which are like little baby clots or
clots,
things.
Yeah.
So there's been reports of people having problems, obviously, from that. So the combined, if you did a positive PCR test, a chest x-ray, bloods, and obviously clinical presentation of the patient, they're most likely going to have COVID. But individually, you can't say that they have,
right,
because the presentation is so similar. So this is what they are doing now, I think, is they're becoming a little bit more thorough. There's five different types of PCR tests they're doing now. They've got lateral flow PCR and then a couple of others, point of care one and other bits and pieces, one that checks tests for antibodies. So they're really progressing in ways to try and filter out, because if you've got someone that comes in with COVID, they need to be isolated. Where if you've right. got someone that's coming in who presents like someone who's got COVID, but you're not sure, until they're diagnosed with COVID, they don't need to be isolated. So if they're coming in with heart failure symptoms, which look a lot like COVID symptoms, then that person could potentially be at risk getting COVID by being in a ward or A&E department with loads of COVID positive people. So a lot of it's logistics as well, because it's easy just to throw 20 patients in an A&E bay if there's not nothing contagious around like COVID. But obviously if you've got someone with COVID and he's coughing and spluttering everywhere, it'll infect everybody in A&E. So this is the other thing that people aren't aware of is they, these people have to be isolated, and that's why they go onto these wards. And that again is why if the PCR test has been the only diagnosis, they potentially could be going onto a COVID ward without COVID,
right?
And then get
now. I have a question for you. Can you explain to everybody the enzymes, the ACE1 and the ACE2, and basically what that is and why that is so important
yes.
for patients that have heart disease and diabetes, which, oh my God, almost our entire population does now.
Exactly. This is the main reason why I wanted to speak to you today, because I've recently learned this. Because I'm just a paramedic. I'm not a doctor or anything, so I don't want people to be like, hey, who does this guy think he is? I'm just a paramedic. I've just been involved in this sort of stuff for about 10 years, and have friends, consultant friends and colleagues all in different areas of medicine. So you learn a lot when you want to. So, you know, this is all stuff I've got links for and journals for. So it's as peer reviewed and, you know, backed up as it can be. I'm not just, you know, assuming here because I've got reputation to uphold, a little one. So basically it got me thinking with the whole why they've closed schools down. So the reason that children are not getting COVID is because we have an enzyme in our body called ACE1 and ACE2, and they are responsible for controlling inflammation in your body. So it's like a seesaw. And if you've got more ACE2, then the seesaw becomes imbalanced, then you'll get inflammation, and ACE1 counteracts the inflammation. So we need there to be equilibrium and balance on the seesaw for the body to be okay. So the way COVID works is it gets into the body, it attaches to the ACE2 in your body and shears it off and consumes it, and then turns that into another virus cell. And that obviously tilts the seesaw the wrong way. So then your body starts getting inflammation, which is then when you start becoming unwell and, you know, you get all the symptoms from COVID. But this
The body-wide aches and stuff.
Yes, yeah. This is what we call systemically unwell. So that's but this is all happening at a cellular level. So this all starts off, and then as the imbalance occurs, you'll become more unwell. So children have very little ACE2 enzyme in their bodies, and you get more of it as you get older. So if there's less ACE2 in the body, in the lung tissues, this is all happening. The virus can't bond or shear off the ACE2, so therefore it can't manifest and make you unwell. So that's right. Why children don't get it because mm-hmm. they have pretty much natural immunity because their bodies aren't fully developed enough. And this goes right up till pretty much all of school. And the reason I wanted to get this out there is because if you know this, then the first thing you say is, well, why are they shutting schools then? And that's exactly the question we should be asking, because there's no evidence anywhere to show that kids are going to get COVID. And even if they did get it, there's no evidence out there to say that their asymptomatic transmission would be possible. because if the virus isn't able to manifest or multiply in their lungs, they're not going to be coughing or then sneezing.
They can't spread it.
Spread it, exactly,
because
that.
they can't get it in the first
exactly,
place.
Exactly that. And we'll be hearing more cases. I know there have been kids that have been testing positive in schools, which is why we've been shutting down. But then we don't know, like we say, whether they have just generally had influenza A or influenza B, really, unfortunately. So there is more evidence to suggest that COVID isn't having any issues with children. But obviously there's been no actual physical studies. There's right. probably some going on at the moment, but at the minute there isn't. So the idea behind closing schools, when you know this sort of information, you're a bit like, well, why have they done it? But it also, going carrying on from this, the older you get, the more of this ACE2 enzyme you produce. Men produce more than women. Fat people produce more than skinny people, okay? So, and also this ACE inhibitor enzyme is found, and this is where, you know, everyone's going to be like, oh, okay, it's obviously found in the heart, the lung, the kidneys, and the liver. So if you take blood pressure medications, if you take any medications to do with diabetes, if you take any medication to slow your heart rate down, beta blockers or anything like that, you're at risk. And then if you have anything like heart failure and diabetes and asthma and any other actual ailment that you need to take these medications for, you're even more at risk. And then to couple that, if you're a little bit overweight and a man, you're even more at risk. So that is why, obviously, the highest demographics of deaths in COVID have been the elderly, because they've got a lot of these ACE2 in their bodies. As you get older, your body struggles to make ACE1 and ACE2. So it struggles. It takes longer for your body to kind of get your balance back, which is why the elderly usually take longer to get better. Everything just stops being produced as you get older. So that is why people with comorbidities are more at risk, because at a cellular level, they're taking medications which are trying to stop the seesaw imbalance already. And then COVID comes along and just messes about with it even more. And that's why they become so unwell, because there's already an imbalance in their body before COVID gets there. And then COVID creates an even more of an unbalance. And sometimes the medications and things can cause more harm.
Exactly. And that's... this is our bingo Ringo moment, because ding, 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 this little discussion right here just hit the nail on the head, because especially here, almost every single person that I know has been told by their doctor, you're pre-diabetic. We're going to need to start you on medication. You're pre-diabetic. Pre-diabetic means you don't have it yet, but you might get it later, but people are wanting to start you on medication for something that you don't need. So you have the multi-gazillion dollar drug industries partnered with the quote medical community, and they're pushing these medications on people. And so the ACE stuff, most medications, heart medications, he's correct, and diabetes medications cause more of that, which puts your body completely out of balance. So you can't heal yourself, and you always feel terrible because you can't get back in balance. Exactly. So this is our come to Jesus, hello, wake up, slap you in the face moment. If you're not paying attention right now, go back and listen to that part again. Because, yeah, you need a slapping.
I mean, this is paraphrased massively into language that obviously everybody can take away and go away and research if they want to look into it more. Because I used to hate reading medical stuff, because it just hurts my brain to read it.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, and I've always preferred if someone could read it and translate it into English, and then I could understand it. So I thought, right, well, maybe that's something that I could probably get on board and do with and things. So it's basically, yes, it's the fitter you are, the better weight you are, the healthier you are, the better chance you've got of not getting not just COVID, but just unwell, full stop. But then that's right. You know, basic human kind of things that we should be getting told.
And the ACE1 and the ACE2, when they're out of balance, it's not just like he said, it's not just COVID. It leaves you susceptible for literally anything. Hello, arthritis. Your enzymes are out of balance, so your body's out of its homeostasis or balance mode, and so you're susceptible to literally any kind of virus, bacteria, joint issues, literally anything and everything.
And this is the problem, and this is where the hydroxychloroquine and zinc arguments have come up from, because I know there's been lots of doctors that gave their patients with these comorbidities and these risk factors hydroxychloroquine and zinc to take, and they said that they didn't have any patients, which is great. The data has not been freely available because it came up right at the start of the pandemic, and I think those people are still out there, but it didn't get much traction, but obviously now it is. But the hydroxychloroquine and the zinc stops the virus from attaching to this ACE2 enzyme in your body, which then essentially gives you not an immunity to it, but reduces your risk of getting it. And that's why you got to take the two together. But I think you have to take it with the zinc or vitamin K or something else, because if you take too much hydroxychloroquine and zinc, you can give yourself kidney stones.
Exactly.
Because your body it struggles to break it down. So there's another vitamin you need to take with it. And I forget, because I just have multivitamins. I think it's vitamin K2, and that helps break down, stops you getting kidney stones in case you go a bit crazy. But going back to what you said about the whole pre-diabetic thing, pre-diabetes is just a diet change and a lifestyle change, and that's it.
Right.
So it always frustrates me when they say, right, yeah, we need to look at doing this and look at doing that. Same with high blood pressure. Most high blood pressure can be cured just by having a healthy diet and everything else. But, you know, it seems to be that that's not how some people want to live nowadays. And I don't know whether it's a generation thing or not, but I think a lot of people nowadays, I don't want to start taking meds because there's always a side effect. And then you're just trying to...
100%, yeah.
Exactly. And then you're always trying to balance out or, you know, manage the side effect and things, which is just not where I want to be ever.
And then here, take another pill to counteract the side effects. And then that one has side effects.
Exactly.
And then here, we'll give you another one.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. It's so key because, like, even with the blood pressure stuff, they'll diagnose people coming into the office with high blood pressure, but maybe that person doesn't like going into a medical office. And so every time they go in to see the doctor, like, their blood pressure is sky high because they're nervous and they're anxious.
White coat syndrome.
It's called, white coat syndrome. And so I've seen a lot of doctors that were like, we're going to, you know, put you on medication because your blood pressure's high. But if they took their blood pressure at home, it would never be that way.
Yeah.
Or patients that ate or drank before they came in had like a bunch of French fries that were very salty, et cetera. All that stuff raises your blood pressure. So does having a migraine or a headache.
Exactly.
So there's things that you can look at and change on your own. I would strongly not suggest jumping into bed with the pharmaceutical industry.
I know. Well, there's a reason why there's no adverts on telly at the moment giving you ways to stay healthy at home, is there?
Exactly.
You'd have thought in 12 months there would have been like, hey guys, let's put together some sort of, you know, 5-minute, you know, Q&A session. And they'd be encouraging people to try and get in the sun, go for walks, take vitamins, drink water, try and keep active. You know,
that's the thing. They shut that information down. I mean, they were literally booting people off of social media that were suggesting sunlight, you know, zinc, vitamin C, things like that, whatever. They're like, okay, well, you don't have an account anymore because you can't tell people to do things to stay healthy.
I know. And it seems to be that we're, especially, well, I don't know if it's in England as well, but a third of our population, I think we've caught up with the States now because we weren't all quite a third, but a third of our population is considered now obese or overweight. And I know you guys had that statistic for a little while as well, which,
we always do. Yeah.
So that's not good because I'm not fattest. I really ain't fattest, but I see all the problems that happens when you don't have a healthy lifestyle. And I'm not saying, you know, that everyone needs to be looking like they go to the gym all the time, because you can still be healthy and carry a little bit of weight as well. Cause sometimes it's just, people can't be as active as they want to, but you can still be healthy on the inside as best you can as well. But there just seems to be no sort of direct pressure to do that. We're making everybody think it's okay to be big, and it's not.
Right.
Because the future health risks are just too great. And the thing that this made me start looking into this more is because I've been hearing a lot of people saying, right, because over here at the minute it's turning into Nazi Germany with this bloody vaccine. Everywhere you go, which we'll go on to in a second.
exactly.
But
get your barf bag ready.
So it's Nazi Germany with this vaccine. Everyone said, well, if they don't take the vaccine, and these are celebrities that have said it over on Twitter and things as well in our country, they're saying, right, well, people, you know, if they don't want to get the vaccine, then they shouldn't get treatment. Get them to sign a waiver to say that if they get COVID, they're not going to get treatment. And if you could, to rebuttal that very quickly, you could say, okay, so what do we do about the drug addicts? Do we not treat them because it's self-induced drug overdoses? What about the alcoholics? Do we not treat them because it's self-induced liver cirrhosis? What about the asthmatics? Do we not treat them because it could be self-induced smoking? So we just don't treat anybody, because 99% of the stuff that comes through the door in a hospital is self-inflicted.
Self-inflicted, yeah.
Be it tobacco, alcohol, drugs, bad diet, you know, everything. So it's like, so we just won't treat anybody. So that switch in people's sort of psyche is the concern, because it's like, okay, so we're not allowed to, we don't treat people who don't have a vaccine because that's your opinion, but it's okay to watch everybody else slowly kill themselves in other means. And
like over here, it's so weird because there are literally lawmakers and stuff in Congress or in the state legislatures that say now that if you don't get the vaccine, they want to jail you for murder.
Wow.
Excuse me?
Wow.
Excuse me. Or they've tried that before, even with people that don't wear a mask. They should be charged with premeditated murder. Not wearing a mask or not taking a vaccine is not murder. You have that option. You have that choice. You remember that big pussy hat wearing group? My body, my choice.
Yeah.
It's my body, my choice. And sorry, but you're not sticking that fucking garbage in my arm.
Well, I saw something the other day, and you're 100% right. I've been offered the vaccine at my place of work, and I politely declined, and they were fine with it, which was great at the moment.
Right.
Part of our roles, we're required to have I've had to have Hep B, I've had to have proof of immunization for HIV and AIDS, and had my childhood vaccinations.
Right.
All they would have to do is change the criteria of what we call our occupational health over here, to then start including that you'd need to have yearly COVID vaccines or whatever, because the antibodies aren't going to stick around long enough anyway, which we can talk about in a bit. But so that could be something else. But then that would be like having to prove that you've had a flu injection every year as well, which we don't currently have to do either. So at the moment they get, you know, they're being okay with it, but I don't know how much longer that's going to go on for. Which obviously brings us nicely into talking about the actual vaccines themselves. So you guys over there, have you got your vaccine predominantly is the Pfizer one, isn't it?
Yes, that was the first one that came out. Mm-hmm. And then the Moderna one came out after that.
Yeah.
Now, I will tell you, surprisingly enough, that just this week, Merck, who is one of our huge, huge vaccine manufacturers here in the United States, actually stopped working on the COVID vaccine because they said in their trials that they have found that natural immunity works better than what they were getting during trial testing from the vaccination.
No fucking so, shit.
Kudos to Merck for first coming out publicly and saying what we have already known from the get-go. So let's talk about this vaccine because is there ever anything in medicine, especially vaccinations right off the bat, that are 90 to 95% effective?
No. Hell no. That's all I can say to that. Not a fucking chance in hell. No way. No. Even Domestos bleach, which is a bleach brand we have in England, that's only 99.9% effective. So even bleach isn't sure, you know?
Exactly. But we have commercials on TV here for products, spray products that kill the virus, COVID. And I'm thinking, okay, for anybody with any type of brain cell, okay, so you have to get a vaccine and it might or might not cure it. Wink, wink, I say that loosely. But you have sprays and wipes and stuff on TV, Clorox wipes or you know, whatever, where they say it's effective at killing the virus. So why don't we just like, we use whatever ingredients is in that and just, you know, like then there shouldn't be any virus around, right?
Well, yeah, in theory. Someone said that though once, didn't they?
They did.
And they got into a whole lot of trouble.
And then the media like went berserk.
I understood where he was coming from. I really did.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
You know, I did get where he was coming from. But, you know, obviously in classic Trump presentation, it was like, yeah, okay. You could have done that a little bit better, but I don't
exactly.
know. Mm-hmm. God love him.
So I'm just saying, it makes perfect sense to me that if you already have like wipes or sprays that are completely effective at killing it per their own, you know, and you don't want to get in trouble for false advertising, but they're claiming it kills it. So why do we need this vaccine that's going to alter our DNA?
Exactly. Exactly. And most vaccines,
just curious.
Well, this is it. What we should have is just have it on in street hoses and then just spray everywhere. And then
exactly,
we'll be fine, won't we?
And so the vaccine for this is exactly like the flu vaccine in this aspect. How many times have they made a new flu vaccine because they've had a new strand come through that they didn't see before? And so supposedly COVID is mutating into all these strands. So your vaccines are never going to end because there's always something new that's going to mutate.
Yeah. Essentially. Well, this is, I had a discussion with my friend about this because I was under the impression that to get immunity or T cell memory immunity from a virus, you need to be injected with either the live or dead particles of the virus for your body to then attack and then it remembers how to do it. That's generally how vaccines work, which is why you only need to have so many of your polio and other bits and pieces because your body does remember it. Now, so when the COVID vaccine, we've got the Pfizer one over here and the AstraZeneca one. And I don't think we've got the Moderna one over here. The AstraZeneca one is got the more robust methodology compared to the Pfizer one, a methodology right. being the kind of parameters of how they've done the study. But that's still not great. But AstraZeneca have admitted that their vaccine is only between 40 and 80% effective. More likely 40 to 50%, which is what most vaccines are. But their problem is they only did it up to the age of 45, which is useless because obviously predominantly people over the age of 80 get so that's why the EU have not used it because they said there's not been enough you know, trials in the actual vulnerable category. So it renders it useless, essentially paraphrasing that.
I was just going to say, that's completely, of course, you know, up to age 45, but it's the elderly patients that are dying. That makes complete and total sense. But I'm just going to say that is the way the government works. That is the way drug companies work.
Yeah.
They're, every single trial that they have doesn't make sense.
Exactly.
So the parameters don't make any sense.
They make their own parameters to fit in to, so it's like any book that you read that just you kind of get the ending at the beginning. This vaccine is 90 to 95% effective straight away. Bullshit. straight off the bat, you think, well, nothing is that effective.
Exactly. And here's the thing that people need to understand is that the clinical trials literally do not end until 2023. So anybody claiming to you that, oh no, clinical trials have already been completed, blah, blah, blah. No, they have not. They have not. They're not finished. They won't be finished until 2023. And so for them to come out and claim the safety and efficacy and all of that before trials are completed is complete and utter hogwash, bullshit garbage. Don't buy it.
Bullshit. Bullshit, I tell you.
Bullshit. It is total bullshit.
It is bullshit. And then, and to back that up, they've been trying to create MRHA, help me out, Janet, my brain's gone stupid.
mRNA.
mRNA. Sorry. So they've been doing that. I know, right? I can't even speak.
You're related to me. It's okay.
I know, right? I know. So they've been trying to create an mRNA vaccine for rabies for the last 3 years, and they've had no development at all. Right. But so they're not, the theory of how these mRNA vaccines work is great. You know, oh, it synthesizes this protein. And if we can synthesize this protein, we can stop this from happening. That's great. But I don't think it's happening. And that is why they've not been able to have or find a flu vaccine. I don't like to say vaccine because that means essentially that you're immune. So it's not, they've not been able to find a flu shot or injection.
Exactly.
That they only have to give once. That's why you have to have repeated flu shots every year, because
exactly
they predict the strain that they think is going to be around that year, and then they give you that vaccine. So that's why you still can get the other strains of coronaviruses and flus.
Right.
And they're only 40% effective as well of reducing people's chances of getting the flu as well. So, you know, some people get the flu. Again, sorry, I meant to say this as well. A colleague of mine used to get flu every now and again. He'd get flu. So he took the flu shot because he thought, you know, it'd stop him getting flu as bad. And what it did do was what we'll talk about in a bit, which has just made it worse, really, right. Really worse, to the point he ended up having to be hospitalized because of it. And then he's never had it since, and he still gets flu, but not as bad as it was that time after he had the jab. And he works in medicine as well. So, you know, not everybody who's doing what we do agrees with everything that happens. But it's not that easy to just drive a train through your career to stop all this sort of stuff from happening.
Exactly.
You know, and there are people that swear blind by it, and they said that they used to get the flu and then they haven't. So it probably, you know, they're one of the lucky 40%. So I'm not saying it doesn't work. And I don't think these vaccines that are being rolled out are intentionally trying to be dangerous. I don't think they're going to intentionally, unless it's out of the government's hands because they are absolving themselves of it, because they're going to be like, well, the pharmaceutical company said this and that and the other. So there'll be no one to blame. But
exactly. And here's the thing. We all know the wonderful Bill Gates from hell, and all of his colleagues think that we need to reduce the world population by 50%. And I will tell you, I was reading a frightening article the other day that was like, what if this like vaccine is actually how they're going to reduce the population by 50%? And I'm reading this and, you know, there's very interesting points in there that I could completely understand. But in this, they were stating within 5 years that we would have a 50% reduction just from the people that got vaccinated.
That's not long.
That's an interesting, yeah, that's an interesting take, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah,
you might say on that, but could I see them doing that? Yes, absolutely, because, you know, that they're evil.
Yeah, well, just a little bit, but it would be the perfect guise to do it. So there's a thing called cytokine storm, which can happen mm-hmm. with vaccines, especially the coronavirus vaccines. Right. It can...
Tell people what that is.
So basically, a cytokine storm is when you... So what this is what was happening in the animal trials, in the ferrets and the cats, when they were trying to do a mRNA vaccine for coronavirus. What can happen is the vaccine's not strong enough. So what it does is the antibody, it obviously creates the T-cell memory. The body then releases the... immune cells I'm having a brain fart. My lad just walked up the stairs. Go in the toilet. Right. So basically what can happen is the vaccine will obviously program your immune system to remember, you know, what it thinks to do. So you'll then get injected or infected with the flu. Your body will then release its immunoresponse cells, and they're not strong enough to stop the virus from mutating or replicating, and they don't destroy it. But the immune system cell thinks it has, and then goes back to the immune system, and then the virus attaches to that cell, and then it goes into the immune system, and then the virus then infects all of your immune system cells, your T cells essentially as well. So then your immune system starts attacking itself, and then they call it cytokine storm, because there's just loads of, basically there's loads of shit going on in your body that your body doesn't like because the virus has infected your immune system cells. So it's freaked out because it's like, my immune system cells are dying. Let's kill it. But we can't kill our immune system cells because that's what we used to kill things with. So you end up, a lot of the animals became really unwell, poorly, and died, which is why they never got any further with the trials. And this is out there on the internet as well. I haven't got links directly to that, but it would be hard for you to find that at all.
Right.
But so this is what the potential risk is of the vaccine. So we're fine. We'll all take it and everyone will be fine. Yeah, I had mild symptoms, which we'll talk about soon. But next year is when we'll know, because if there's another strain of flu or flu comes out next year and it has a reaction with this vaccine and we start seeing loads of people having these really bad reactions or these cytokine storms, they could then put it down to a different strain of flu, more severe than COVID, label it COVID-23.
Right. Right.
And everybody will die. Well, no, not everybody will die, but lots of people, you know, this could be like the prequel to it.
Exactly.
But yeah. because it will present like it's just flu or how COVID has, it won't have any tie into the vaccine or anything else. It'll just be, oh no, we've got another more vigorous, lethal, aggressive strain. And that's what's happening. And then that would be how they could potentially get away with it, because they've not done it. It's potentially just another virus that's right. popped out, and we would never know, because as soon as they label them COVID, they don't do autopsies and they just put them straight in the incinerator.
Exactly. So what kind of have you seen patients with side effects, and if so, what are they?
So yes, I have. And a lot of my other friends have as well. And a lot of the frontline paramedics have as well, because I've been trying to get as much information on this. Now, obviously, I can't verify this with written documentation and everything else. This is just chatting between the frontline workers in confidence and everything else. But yes, we are. The gentleman that I used to go to for most of my material and things is, or to validate my material, I don't want to, he's good at making sure I don't chat shit, basically. Well, I do that naturally, but he makes me chat less shit. so he was getting asked by his HR department to get the vaccine, and he basically turned around and said, when I stop treating patients with adverse reactions, then I'll consider having the vaccine, and they've not bothered him since. So, right. Yes, so we're getting dizziness, giddiness, which doesn't sound too bad, but in the elderly, that's increased prevalence of fall. So we're getting a lot more patients coming in with fall injuries because of dizziness, which doesn't sound too bad. But then obviously fractured femurs, fractured humeral. No one elderly you want to fracture because they've got bones that are so brittle that they just disintegrate. So we're getting a lot of people falling, loss of balance, and then more mild COVID symptoms in some cases, tachycardia, fast heart rate, or postural hypertension. So when they're standing up, they get dizzy and feel faint. So some quite mild symptoms. Another gentleman I spoke to 2 days after getting the vaccine, he ended up spending 3 weeks in hospital with COVID-like symptoms. But he wasn't on a ventilator, but he nearly was, and he was a chef in a hospital, never had a vaccine prior to that, never been unwell, working all the way throughout this whole 12-month period. And then 2 days after the vaccine, he ended up in hospital. And he didn't put it down to the vaccine. He thought, oh, I must have just had COVID. And I was like, think
actually,
about it.
Buddy.
Yeah, think about it. And then he kind of, I saw the light bulb go off. And and then I've been seeing, literally about, especially last week, 2 weeks after, maybe 3 weeks after the vaccine, really weird symptoms from people becoming really unwell, septic, and manifestations of ailments that they've had, but not as bad as that. So, you know, things that have normally been managed quite well, heart failure or other bits and pieces, and they've just been having really funny turns where they've just become really unwell quite quickly, to the point where most of the people have been telling me she was fine until she had the vaccine. So
right,
it's difficult to differentiate because you've got just as much argument to say that it's not caused by the vaccine. It could be just their heart failure getting worse and this, that, and the other. So I do appreciate that, and that's why we do keep these opinions to ourselves, obviously, because it's easy to kind of debunk these things, because obviously, especially now in England, because our Prime Minister Boris has stopped we have ONS, which is online national statistics for the country. So you can go on there and see how many deaths have been in the year and age and group and everything else. Well, at least that's how we were able to see the yearly deaths from last year. And that's why we've been kicking off, because they're no different than any other year. From increased debt. But that's another story for another time. He stopped them from publishing the statistics with regards to reactions and deaths to the vaccines. So now that evidence is being withheld, or that information is being withheld.
And you know what's funny about that is here, we have what's called the VAERS system. It's the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System.
Okay.
And so anytime somebody has side effects from the vaccine, things like that, healthcare providers are supposed to put that in. It has been so overwhelmed that it was taken offline. It like crashed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can't, like here, you can't sue a vaccine manufacturer. You have to report stuff through this VAERS system, and then it goes into a U.S. vaccine injury court where the court will actually award money, you know, because it's taxpayer money, basically. They take our taxpayer dollars, they fill this up, and then they may give somebody with a, you know, something life-threatening that happened, or, you know, or sterilization, or, you know, seizure disorder that developed or something, they may give them like $100,000. but that's the way it works here. You can't sue them. And so for this system to go down, now you can't even report vaccine injuries through this system, which basically cuts off your legal ability to go after money.
Nobody's responsible, essentially.
Basically, pretty much.
That's it. And then if you look into the methodology of the Pfizer vaccine, then you would. It's so they only did their trials up to the age of 45 initially, and then were told to go back and increase it to above 80. Whether they did or didn't, we don't know. They just changed it on the documentation. They only used patients that were fit and well. So they had no other comorbidities like heart failure, asthma, and all these other bits. So they were fit and well patients. They didn't use patients from every age group either, from 45 to 80, because they couldn't get the volunteers. So when you haven't done a clinical trial using all the age groups, you can't therefore confidently say that everyone in that age group is going to be fine if you've not tested them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah, exactly. So this vaccine is 95% effective on fit and well people with no other comorbidities at all. And one, they didn't tell us, I think it was just a positive PCR test confirmed their COVID. So we didn't even know how bad they were with COVID. They could have all just had a positive PCR test and nothing else. We don't know if they were, you know, really unwell with it, or how long they'd had it and this, that, and the other. So it's that in itself. When the foundation of any study is not right, then the results are not going to be right.
Exactly.
And then obviously couple that with the fact Pfizer's owned by China, and then couple that with Pfizer's in trouble with Nigeria, I think it is, for the HPV vaccine, coupled with Bill Gates and all this kind of. So it's not hard to, and I'm not anti-vax either. I've had my vaccines. My lad has. I'm struggling with the next dose of preschool vaccinations he's supposed to have morally at the minute. And I'm struggling if I have to give the vaccine to any. I haven't been asked to yet, but I know it might be something that they might start asking us to do. And that's when I'm going to really struggle. I'm petrified of being in that position, if I'm honest.
No, I understand that as a parent, but I'm going to tell you something that you may or may not have seen. A Peruvian court actually ruled that Bill Gates, George Soros, and the Rockefeller family created the coronavirus pandemic.
Wow. I would not be surprised.
A court in Peru. Isn't that interesting?
Yes, it is. I think I heard about this, actually. They did, didn't they? But they were one of the first ones, I think, weren't they, to decide. But then that's been buried like Satan, hasn't
so,
it really?
So it's funny, but think about that in these terms. Like when this first came out, I even did like a Periscope, and I was like, ugh. I watched the Bill Gates documentary on coronavirus, and that's the narrative that the WHO and the CDC ran with, that it came from this bat in this wet market and blah, 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 and all this other shit that Gates said, which is stupid. You know, it's going to come out your eyeballs and all this other stuff. And so these are the same people. They're not only getting Netflix deals, they're getting book deals. Like Fauci just got a real sweetheart deal over here. And so the studies are the same way. And I want everybody to understand that when they're doing mask studies or drug studies or whatnot, they can be very, very biased, very one-sided, and information is not always presented in a factual manner. It depends on who is actually paying for the study and what information they want the public to see.
Yep.
Because if they were actually reporting honest to God, true information, like in their mask studies, no one would ever be wearing one.
No.
You know what I'm saying? But now, like Fauci's like, well, you need to wear two. Two masks would be 75% effective. And then if you wear three masks, it's 90% effective. And then the next step is if the government or Dr. Fauci tells you to put a plastic bag over your head and tie it off, yeah. you'll do it because Fauci said so.
It's 90% effective, but you can't breathe.
I'm just saying, yes.
Yeah.
Just cut off, just strangle yourself and everything will be much better. <That's it.
laughs> Everyone just choking themselves out in the street.
Exactly.
Everyone's safety words flying out. Bananas, oranges.
What's that called? Dang it. What's the proper terminology for that?
Asphyxiation.
Well, you know, where it's a sexual fetish thing.
Oh, I don't know.
Or autoerotic intoxication.
Oh, there you go. Oh, look at that. You tracked that out. You were just trying to find the proper nerd for it. That's you. That's everyday life.
I choke myself all day long.
That's where Greg is now, isn't it? He's not in the bedroom. He's in the basement, isn't he? Or the wardrobe. Bring out the gimp.
We are so not right.
No, I know. I know. Yeah, I know. It's quite funny.
But you know, it's the way of like the medical and pharmaceutical complex, though, is to manipulate data in studies, manipulate trials, not release full information to the public, just like what you were saying with the, you know, the people that are completely healthy and well up to age 45 being your quote study target group.
Yeah, I know. it's almost like they just tested everybody who was in work. Wasn't it? Who's here right now? You guys will do. That's right. Yeah, you guys will do.
Exactly.
Well, I think
and a lot of times when they have to bribe people to be in their studies, like, we'll pay you. Well, nobody volunteered on their own, so we'll pay you. Hey, wait. We'll give you gift cards. Wait, we'll give you gift cards and money. Yeah. Like, do you really think that you're going to get the cream of the crop kind of people to come in there and voluntarily be experimented on like a lab rat?
Nope.
I'm just saying.
Exactly. And then when it comes to looking at the clinical, because I know there are lots of people out there that do look at clinical studies and trials, which is brilliant. You want to always try and read the study, not the actual editorial of the study, because the editorial right. of the study can sometimes be a little bit biased, and that's right. their perception of a summary of the study. You might get a different view or take right. on it. So, you know, you want to try and read the original studies as well that have been done. So Pfizer's actual original study, not the one that the New England Journal of Medicine published. Actually go onto Pfizer's website. I know it's big. I think it's about 200 pages, but if you want to read anyway and do that sort of stuff. But yeah, because like what you said, they can be biased. Mm-hmm. And also look at who's wrote the article, mm-hmm. like whether, you know, if a doctor who works in oncology is talking about wearing masks, no disrespect to him, I wouldn't really take his word for it, because he would very rarely be wearing a mask apart from his face-to-face stuff. I'd take
exactly
someone who's wearing a mask for 14 hours a day for four shifts on the bounce in A&E opinion over somebody else's opinion with regards to whether they feel breathless wearing masks and things. So you've got
exactly.
to see whether the studies are being written by clinicians that are actually in that field, and not just someone who's just got some letters after their name, because people can be bought, as we know, with scientists and everything else. They can all be bought and manipulated, which again 100%. Makes it even, exactly. So then it makes it even hard for us when we're doing critical analysis essays or whatever for our degrees and things. We can't use one. You can use one study to put in a alternate theory, but you can't use one study to back up your methodology or your means of changing your practice. You have, you know, that just doesn't work in medicine, because you can't, one study just doesn't change the course of history. Well, it shouldn't anyway. No. If it does, then that's it shouldn't. But if it does, then that study is normally peer reviewed and then worked on and torn apart and everything else. But again, people don't know that,
right?
So it's difficult to you know, to even find the accurate information out there from medicine, which doesn't bode good. But to positive note, I wanted to throw in there as well. There was nobody admitted in hospital in a certain trust with COVID that needed to be put on oxygen last week on one day.
That's good.
Yeah, man. It is good. It is good. Endemic vaccinations, immunity, we don't know really what that is, you know. Is it because it's not becoming as cold now and things, but you know, but the other good thing as well is there has been loads of clinical trials and things going on during COVID, which is how they found out the use of dexamethasone works quite well, and how other bits and pieces, how lying people on their front when they're being on the ventilators helps, which they did that in a study in Italy as well. So there are active cohorts going on at the minute that will find, you know, not a cure, but something that might be able to stem it.
Because a little better treatment options, hopefully.
Well, this is it, because you've got such a big cohort of people, because everybody's got COVID, apparently. You've got a massive amount of study people, cohort we call it. So you've got lots of people to trial this data on. So you're getting quite quick turnaround times in these studies because you've got such a big flow of people. So you'd get quite good, quick results if you started treating people with a certain medications and whether it worked or whether it didn't. You know, mm-hmm. So that's good because it helps with finding cures or, you know, treatments that that can help, you know, symptom management and everything else.
And there's not a, quote, cure. So pardon me because I misspoke a moment ago. There is no cure for a virus. All you can do is treat symptoms. And so even like, with the flu, this lovely Tamiflu that they came out with.
Oh, yeah.
It is not a treatment. It is to shorten the lengths or the symptoms. Just like vaccinations aren't meant to prevent or stop, it's supposed to lessen the severity of things. And case in point for that is the chickenpox vaccine. People know I have talked about that before. When I did the reporting for the state for that, when they first developed it and shipped it out everywhere, and they were like, you know, we were reporting in the VAERS system, okay, these people got vaccinated and they're getting chicken pox. But we were told it was supposed to prevent it. And so we were reporting so many numbers that they were like, oh, well, wait a minute. We need a second dose. And maybe the second dose will stop it. And so we had, of course, our state made it mandatory for all kids to get two. And so we were still seeing people that got the vaccine and were still getting chickenpox. So then we had to actually start reporting on how severe the chicken pox were, and they're like, weird, that didn't work. One dose didn't work. Two doses didn't work. And they're doing the same thing with this, where it's like one dose of the COVID vaccine isn't enough. Now you have to get another, what is it, 90 days later?
Yeah, well,
isn't that right?
Yeah, that was the original study, 12 weeks. Well, no, it was 12. That was the other thing. That was the other big clanger that we've not even touched on, actually. The original clinical trial data was conducted that people had the second vaccination within 12 weeks of the first, but they couldn't do that, or I don't know why they didn't do that. And in England, anyway, they extended it to 3 months. So if you're not going to stick to the parameters of what the clinical trials were done and just make your own rules. But then I think someone spoke, well, I think they quickly released an article saying, oh, actually, no, it could be better for immunity if we leave it longer. Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. So.
Yeah. And it doesn't, it's like, it's literally like everything else. Like I said, with the other vaccinations or other quote medications, which are wink, wink, antivirals. They're not a cure. They're not a treatment. They are specifically aimed at reduction of symptoms or the length of time.
Yeah.
So, yeah. This is not a cure-all, be-all, end-all. It's not ever going to like completely take care of anything because that's not what they're designed for.
No, no.
And so, you know, like talking about the things that you've seen in your patients, going back to the FDA study, I did a show on this with my friends Mick and V-Lynn, but talking about just reading what the FDA says here to look out for symptoms, almost everything was neurological or heart-related.
Yeah.
Or of course, death.
Shit, but we don't say that, do we? You know,
that's a fucked up side effect right there, death.
Yeah, but it can't be linked though. Mm-hmm. You can't link it. But you heard about the study in Norway, right? I think where they had 12 or 16 people die within a week in a nursing home of having the vaccine. And they then said afterwards it's got no link to it. And you're like, okie dokie.
Bullshit. And it's so funny though, because like here it's like when it first, like the vaccine first rolled out and you saw all these politicians and shit on TV getting the wink, wink vaccine, wink, wink, like they got it. No, pretty much just injected with saline, or some of them didn't even have a needle on them or whatever. But it was like this big TV extravaganza, you know, oh my God, everybody's getting this vaccination. It's so great. Get it so your neighbors don't die, blah, blah, blah. And then like frontline people are getting it, doctors, nurses, etc. And either they're paralyzed or dropping dead from getting the vaccine. And I'm like, what could possibly go wrong when you're injecting frontline healthcare workers and they're having paralysis? They can't like move the entire side of their body that they got the vaccination on, or they're dropping dead. How is that beneficial to your people who are supposed to care for others?
I know.
I'm curious.
Well, I know that there have been people that, some staff members that have been admitted, or they put it basically under the task of unable to carry out normal duties. So
I wonder why.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Exactly. So I think one person was admitted for breathlessness and things, but I think the majority of symptoms have been quite mild. To healthy people, but I know that there was concerns before they rolled the vaccine out that they weren't sure whether the mild symptoms would be too severe for the vulnerable and the weak, which kind of defeats the object. But I know it was raised. What they did about it, I don't know. Probably nothing. But then, you know, there are lots of people that have had it that have been fine as well. I'm in no way justifying it or making excuses for them, but
No, and I think a lot of it has to do with your immune system.
Yeah, I think so.
And your, you know, your body's ability to, you know, recognize, fight things, et cetera, et cetera. And there are so many factors that go into your own immunity and your own makeup. And I think that has a large part to do with why some people have problems and other people don't. And some of it, you know, either you don't have anything or they're mild or ranging all the way to death, but it just depends on your body's ability to handle things.
Yeah. So that's pot of luck really, isn't it? Essentially. It's,
yeah, exactly. It's like a crapshoot. Yes.
It's like vaccine roulette, isn't it? Vaccine roulette. What you gonna get? Ooh, we don't know. Maybe AIDS. Maybe saline. Who knows? Maybe
it's
sterilization.
Very true.
Did you want some kids? Well, not anymore.
And that's the thing is like my daughter and I had this conversation, and she's like, "No way in hell am I going to get a vaccine at my age, in an age group where you're not supposed to be able to get it, or just barely entering into that, where there's a chance of sterilizing me permanently?
Yeah, I know, right?
Because she wants to have kids in the future, not now, because, no. But that's what she said. She's like, absolutely not. She's like, because there's not enough information and data collection on it. And everything I've read is a huge no-no to me. And yeah, not going to happen.
No, I know. Mm-hmm. Janet, I need to have some dinner. My wife's made me Sunday dinner. And
well,
I can't leave the queen.
We shall close up shop today, but tell everybody, my dear, where they can find you.
Yes, you can find me. You can't find me on Facebook. Well, I'm on Facebook, but I'm banned. I think I'm allowed back on the 8th, but now I'm a part of me. I'm not sure, but it's just Matt Hench Taylor on Facebook. It's Medic Matt 090 on Insta, and Kung Fu Medic on Twitter. But I'm shadow banned on there as well. So it's getting harder and harder to get the word out. But yeah, hence why I've been harassing you to get out of here, because I have a lot to say. And if anybody's got any questions as well, that's always good to, you know, ask those sorts of things. Yep.
So I adore you, my dear. I appreciate you for coming on again. And you are never a bother. You can harass me anytime.
Lovely. I'll tell my wife.
So. Yes.
Thank you.
She can harass me too if she wants.
Well, do you know what? That's not a bad idea. I'll get to hook up Greg as well. We can have like a four-way, five-way thing.
I know, right? We should have like a complete and total. Never mind. I'm not going to go there right
now. Socially distanced one, anyway. No,
So anyway, for me and for Matt, thanks for listening today. Hope you learned some stuff that you didn't already know, and we shall see you next time.